TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken
record. Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 134, and I am Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hi, I'm Tom from Glendale.
Peter from West Hollywood.
Susie from Sherman Oaks.
And Allison from Tarzana.
Woohoo! This week in the news, AMC renews Hell on Wheels for season 3. Yay! Hold on. And then the showrunner quits, so now Hell on Wheels is on hold until they get a new showrunner. So I would think that you would get it clear that you had your showrunner before you picked it up.
Well, no,
John
Chabon, who'd been on the writing staff, was signed on to be showrunner because the co-creator stepped down, and then evidently he cited personal reasons for backing out of that commitment.
I'm annoyed. I want more Hell on Wheels. All right. Next, I have that Scandal and Neighbors got picked up for a full season by ABC.
Why did the Neighbors get picked up?
See, the thing is, Neighbors was one of my picks for the show that was going to be canceled first.
Really? Somebody out there likes it?
I don't understand. That show is so awful.
I don't want to meet whoever that is. That terrifies me.
It's only got tepid reviews. And tepid ratings, so I'm surprised.
I don't know.
But although it must be really cheap to produce.
Although it gives Doug Jones more work because he recurs.
Yay, Doug Jones. I like him. But anyway, Wilford gets a season 3 for FX. And Common Law, which I tried to report on for a while because it had pretty guys, but it was an awful show. And Fairly Legal both got canceled by USA.
It was pretty awful.
It was.
Pretty awful.
Fairly Legal, Common Law. They were both, yes, they were. I don't know what happened because usually USA shows are pretty good. I don't understand how.
Everybody's entitled to have a few misses.
Anyway, Luther season 3 started production or starts production this month.
Yay!
So that means that but they're only shooting 4 episodes.
Ooh.
Exactly.
4 episodes is better than none.
That's true too. So hopefully maybe the summer we might get it by summer.
Hopefully.
So, yay, it's Luther. Next is that Felicia Day will be returning to Supernatural.
Yay, Charlie's back.
Yay.
And Peter, you were you thought that her episode was awesome, so I thought you'd be you'd react a little more to that.
No, I was excited. I totally forgot about it. But very happy.
That enthusiasm seemed called in, that's all. You are calling in. So, anybody else have any news?
I have one item. This is something that is setting the millennials a Twitter.
Millennials.
ABC Family is developing a show called Girl Meets World. It's a follow-up series to Boy Meets World, where Corey and Topanga have a teenage daughter, and it would focus on her adventures. And they have approached Ben Savage and Danielle Fishel, who originated the characters back in the 90s to play them, you know, they're grown up selves.
Right. And lack of reaction. We are talking to the wrong age group.
Hey, we got to get our demos younger.
Because all of us are like, what? What are you talking about?
We do Tron. Yeah.
That's true, but that's from an earlier age. I mean, seriously. All right. Let's start talking about the shows. First up is Homeland. And reminder, we are on the timer.
Yes.
Homeland, what'd you guys think?
Wow.
Seriously. Awesome.
Just wow.
I think this is the episode they're going to be submitting for their Emmy reels
next
year.
Yeah, I figured that already. Yeah, I saw that.
It was intense. It really was. And I was wondering, how are they going to top what they did the week before? Because that was such a shocker. And that just left me staring at the screen with my mouth gaping open. And they managed to do it. It was amazing. It was an incredible episode. And the acting is totally...
Yeah.
It all hinged on the acting. Like, if there were bad actors, this episode wouldn't have worked at all.
The whole series wouldn't work.
But it's even more than that, because you're totally right, Allison. It's like the whole idea of this one being like the Emmy-worthy one. Because I thought, oh, they're doing the interrogation. People who've seen it before me thought it was, oh, great, the interrogation, it's amazing. And I watched it, I'm like, it's not going to be that great. And I went, God, you know what? There was this one moment in there where there was this look on Damian Lewis's face, and I just went, God damn it, I like Brody. I'm like, how did he do that? He makes me hate him and love him and hate him and love him.
Mm-hmm. And that's totally to do with his performance, because
totally.
You just see the entire scene when he's reacting to her,
yeah.
telling him, you know, what she feels and what's going on and trying to get him to talk. And you see it play out on his
Absolutely.
Face without saying a word
yep.
before he actually breaks down.
Right.
And it's just when he finally does it. I mean, that scene could have just died in the hands of worse actors. In the hands of these people, you absolutely believe that he gave in and told
yep.
her, because he was internally feeling it.
Oh, yeah.
And
he was exhausted afterwards, and I was exhausted with him.
The thing I love about this show is I have no clue where they are going, because he's now basically a triple agent.
Double.
Double or triple.
Triple.
You lose count after a while.
Triple, I think, is fair, because you never know with Brody what
right.
he's really thinking.
Seriously.
True. All right, Peter, we haven't heard from you, and I know you watched it.
I liked it. I think it was a little overhyped for me, but I thought it was a really good episode. However... No, don't be wrong. The big thing is you guys are talking about is really good, which is why it was a really good episode. But I gotta say, man, the daughter, the two
oh,
kids,
yeah.
the guy,
yeah.
really, like,
I just forgot that was in there.
Yeah, they don't need the B story for this
no.
particular
yeah.
episode.
They don't at all.
That.
Like, so that,
you know, looking at the demographic, who are they aiming
so
for?
You know, so.
With those kids.
One
yeah,
at a time.
No, but obviously, yes, it was a really good episode, but yeah, I just wanted to. I didn't, you know, I just had to bring up the driving thing, so.
Yeah, because that sort of came out, you know, when they first started it, I thought, oh, she's going to get killed in a car crash, because that'll be something that emotionally affects him. And then they turned it into this ridiculous beast story about them, you know, running over a pedestrian, and I thought, they didn't need to do this.
No.
This is interesting enough on its own without having this diversion.
Exactly.
Not only that, it felt like... It was in danger of, this is 24 territory.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
you know, cougar, you know, Kim versus the cougar, or Kim versus Johnny Drama, the survivalist.
The thing is this story is everything, all the side plots that have been in the story so far all link back to the major plot.
And
this one, as so far, we don't see how it links back. I think we should wait.
Kind of. I'll let you finish. But
I was just going to say, we should just wait and see. I have confidence in these guys. Let's wait and see if it does link back to the main story.
I mean, I'm sure that it does, because he is the vice president's son. And so the machinations that are going to have to be done to try to keep all of this quiet, and how it will affect the vice president, who they're trying to take down anyway, if this gets out. I think that, you know, that ties in anyway, but I just think it's unnecessary extra stuff at the same
okay.
time.
Well, we gotta wrap this one up. I think we've represented the episode pretty well, but thumbs up all around, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, next up, let's talk about Dexter. We haven't talked about Dexter in a couple weeks, but let's just only talk about the last one, which had the first thing that I'm thinking of right now is, of course, the bad part, which is the partner and his hooker or stripper girlfriend and him taking the money. And I'm just like, oh, my God, why is it? Because I feel like this season, what it did really well is it wiped out all the crap from the bad season of last season. They're just like, you know what? Let's just forget everything that happened last season, including the really bad Quinn storyline. So it's like, cool, everybody has a clean slate. So why is it with clean slate that they then saddle him with another bad storyline? Like, that just seems insane. But, okay, regardless of that, the good stuff is LaGuardia figures out and brings Deb into the whole Stokes is not the Bay Harbor Butcher. So, what do you... Oh, sorry, Dokes. Good point.
Yeah, that was good. And then also, I guess we're led to believe that the girl from Chuck... is a serial killer, or at least
yes.
was killing with that guy. We don't know if she's killed since then.
But
right?
I think she gets a thrill. Basically, she made it seem like she was a prisoner of this guy, but actually she gets a thrill out of it. And since she has immunity,
right.
she knows that they can't do anything to her, but now Dexter's like, ooh, I have my next victim. What's weird, actually, about this one is I don't want him to kill her. Normally.
Oh, no. Yeah, I don't want him to kill her either. I will say, though, the big thing was, I thought it was a good episode. It made me worried about the next episode, because this episode, basically, Deb has to shut down Batista, because he's basically like, you know, what's going on with this and everything, and she has to basically shut him down, and she realized in shutting him down it was because she was protecting Dexter, and that's just not who she is, and she can't do that, and she basically tells Dexter something like, oh, you know, doesn't she say something like, you know, don't, you know, I don't want to know, and then basically Dexter at this point then could just go off and be Dexter, and I'm a little worried about that, because what I've liked about this season is I really like Dexter checking in with Deb and how that unfolds.
Yeah, because so it is modifying.
I'm curious about it being like, oh, I guess Deb's out of the picture now, you know, so.
Yeah, because Deb has modified his behavior.
That's what I think is interesting. And again, the next week's episode looked like, yeah, it just didn't look that interesting. Although, oh, one other thing, though, I will say, Ray Stevenson, the guy from Rome, he was great.
Oh, like, yeah. The battle of wits between the two of them was fantastic.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Like, yeah. So,
especially since Deb put handcuffs on him and basically said he couldn't kill that guy himself, so he's like, fine, I can't kill the guy, so he sets the dude up to be killed. That was great.
And then they're like, what is this, the Terminator? Because he kills everybody in the bar, you know, like, that was, no, but it was a good episode. I'm just wary about the next episode, but it was good. Thumbs up.
Yes, I agree. Let's move on to Once Upon a Time.
So this episode is called The Doctor.
Right.
And so they're finally going to reveal the identity of
Dr. Whale.
Yes. And it turns out, and it's tipped off early on, that he's Dr. Frankenstein.
Well, the thing that bothered me was, okay, they tip you off that he's Frankenstein, and then, so by the middle-ish to beginning, you should figure out he's Frankenstein, and then they give you more clues that he's Frankenstein, and then... If you're an idiot and have not figured out that he's Frankenstein...
They spoon-feed you!
At the very end of the episode goes black and white to his laboratory, and somebody goes, Dr. Frankenstein! I was like...
Just in case you're a complete illiterate moron.
I just thought it was a tip of the hat to the Universal movie, and of course, James Whale's movie, which is where they get the name.
Yes.
And I loved it. I the entire episode for me was that one sequence in black and white.
Really? Like, I felt insulted by that scene.
I just felt that we've already got too many fairy tales.
That's true, too.
And now to throw in the possibility of classic, you know, monsters, it's like, come on.
Yes, we'll be getting vampires next, you know?
Seriously.
Like, I worry that they're just going to blur the genres too much, but that aside, I loved that sequence. I'm sorry. I did. I totally ate it up.
Oh, I just felt like this is for the people, these are for the five people that haven't figured out that he's Frankenstein at this point. That was what I thought it was.
It just seems to me, and this was written by Adam and Eddie, the show creators, but it just feels to me like they're flirting with shark jumping.
I'm not even worried. I've come to the conclusion that every other episode of Once Upon a Time is brilliant, and then every other one is... edging on bad. They're not necessarily bad, but they're close. Mm-hmm. And the really good episodes are like every other one. And I don't know why it's like that, but
because Jane Espenson can't write it every week.
that might be the answer. But it's just I've come to that realization, and but the good episodes are really good, and the bad ones are just like blah. They're not awful. Like, if they were awful, that would be a problem. But they're just mediocre. Mm-hmm. So
they're diluting what the show is supposed to be about. And they're... Stop adding more characters. Period.
I agree. See, that is my song, and I can sing in your chorus. So
stop mixing...
Although, you know, Whale has been in since the beginning, and clearly that was the idea behind the character right from the get-go.
But I...
So he doesn't feel tacked on to me.
Well,
is it maybe because they just feel like if they've already exhausted the characters they have, like what's going to compel the story and the plot?
But they haven't exhausted.
And they're talking about their interview in TV, their cover story in Entertainment Weekly a couple weeks back, talks about all the things they want to do. It's like, deal well with what you have now.
Right.
And then when you start bringing those things to the natural end of the storyline, then start bringing in new stuff.
Yeah, there's so much stuff but with the characters.
I mean, they brought in the Alice in Wonderland stuff. They brought in now Mulan.
Let's talk about the episode. Let's bring it back. Let's talk about the episode. What happened this week?
Basically, it's
so did you like what happened this week?
It was okay. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it.
And that's what I said, mediocre.
I think any time that you play Regina as a real person instead of just the evil queen, let her mom be the eviler queen.
The eviler.
But it didn't work for me. Something about mixing Frankenstein with the Snow White thing just felt forced.
I think that what was interesting was you had Regina in the present time trying to redeem herself. So she was kind of good. And then in the flashback, you had her good turning evil. And so
that's a show in itself.
Right. That was fantastic. So I think that part of the story was pretty good. The only thing that made me laugh, of course, with the Dr. Frankenstein was the moment where they're all like, "Are you the warlock?" He goes, "I go by doctor. You can call with the in front of it." And I was just like, what? Like, it was a nice little, it's a slight little nod to Doctor Who, I thought.
I wish we had had the whole, the science versus magic debate between Rumpelstiltskin and Frankenstein, I thought might have, it felt forced trying to resolve that.
In one episode.
Yeah. It was too much.
I agree with you there. I think it should have been more like a running theme, like a thread they pull through this, which would have been much more interesting.
That would have been cool.
Except that he lost his arm in this episode. Is that a joke? I feel like that's an inside joke with the actor, because I'm pretty sure that actor, in almost everything I've seen him in, has lost
a limb.
Because on Vampire Diaries, he loses all his fingers. And I think on Alias, he loses his hand.
He lost his hand.
His hand. So I was like, what is the deal, man? Like,
I think it's in David Anders' contract. I must lose.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I think that he got several really interesting wounds of that kind during Heroes, too.
Well, you're
which
right.
Just proof that he was immortal, that kind of thing.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, he can't cut his limbs off, they just reattach, you know, that kind
of thing. Right, so, yeah, I was like, because when he got his arm, I was like, why does this seem really familiar? So let's wrap that one up. So there's some frustration with this episode and the show in general, but let's move on. All right, next up we're going to talk Walking Dead.
Enter the Governor.
And this episode, I think, proves your point as far as staying focused on a story, because in this particular one, we didn't deal with Rick and the prison at all. It was just all the introduction of the governor.
Wow.
It was kind of fresh that way, which I liked, actually.
Yeah.
It was just very, very, they did the opposite the week before, in that they solely concentrated on Rick, and we didn't see what Michonne or,
Andrea.
The governor, Andrea, were doing in the town. So I think that maybe that's their thing of going back and forth for a while before they can string the two
storylines
together.
Right, but I think this week's episode, they're going to cut back and forth between, at least in the preview, that's what it looked like.
Okay.
But I thought that the governor was really interesting, and I think that because the actor that they picked, he can pull off being charming, and mm-hmm. so you understand why everyone in the town follows him. Because
and he's charismatic.
You get that. You get that cult of personality, but then he's got this vicious... He's a psychopath. Oh, he's actually
Is he a psychopath or a sociopath?
I never get the difference.
Or does he just have an ulterior motive?
The fact that he keeps that trophy room of heads alive.
The aquarium of the zombie heads?
Yeah.
That's weird.
That's
like,
psychopath.
Holy, especially when you see the guy.
Yeah, that he had just killed.
Right. That was freaky.
That was extremely creepy. But what I thought was interesting was the juxtaposition of images. Right before he goes into that room, he takes a look at a photograph of him as a family man with a wife and child who are clearly dead now.
Yes.
Right.
And there was, you think to yourself, well, there must have been a time that, he was just an ordinary guy. And then all this happened, and this is the monster he's turned into.
Right. Peter, you haven't commented.
I think that they're doing a good job with the governor. In the comic book, the governor is pretty evil from the start. So I like that this actor is bringing a level of you kind of want to believe him, and he does seem like a smart guy, even though, of course, I knew, obviously, you can't really trust him. I will say that the head thing, I don't know if that was in the comic book. There's something else that they haven't done yet, but I'm going to save it because they might do it next week. So I thought they did a pretty good job. I didn't really miss Rick and the rest of the gang, because normally that's who we're with. I thought it was a good episode, And yeah, I mean, I'm really this whole season, I'm on board. It's all been solid. So
that's true. We haven't had a bad episode, which is really weird. Why I always have to make myself watch it. I don't know why. I mean,
I have to make myself turn away when they start decapitating left and right.
Yeah, there's that. I never eat when I watch Walking Dead.
No, and don't eat Italian when you're watching Walking Dead.
One thing we forgot to talk about is the brother. Not Daryl.
Merle. He's got an axe to grind.
Well, what's interesting is what should clue them in to not trust the governor is that the governor trusts Merle. Because Andrea knows the kind of person that Merle is, and based on that alone, it should tell her not to trust the governor.
But it's interesting how the governor basically has Merle and these others under his thumb.
Well, the fact that Merle is afraid of him should be a clue.
Exactly. You know? Yes, that's true. When was the last time we saw Merle in a subordinate position?
Right.
He's genuinely terrified of the governor.
I love the scene when Merle and the doctor are going at it, and the governor like shuts them down. It's like, what is this, high school?
That was pretty good. All right, so thumbs up, Walking Dead. Mm. Next up is Castle. And this was one of the few serious episodes of Castle, which usually, I have to say, they do serious episodes pretty well on this show.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing, too, because it's, you know, usually, you know, it's a crimity.
Right.
But the serious episodes, they usually hit it out of the ballpark.
Yeah, and I thought this was real, because I had a hard time believing they were going to convince me that Castle was guilty and that they would have enough evidence. And as the evidence stacked up against him, I was like, well, I know he didn't kill the woman. So I was like, how did this happen? And I was pretty sure he didn't cheat on Beckett either. So I was what?
So that was good because it made us kind of wonder a little bit about that. But I think the best part is the way they handled it. Like some reviewers said, oh, you know, hey, for tonight's shows, you know, if you're going to watch Castle, I hope you like, you know, the usual trope where it's just, you know, hey, everybody, this person that we've known for so long suddenly is perceived as potentially being the suspect, and everyone he works with and knows, like, suspects him. So I was like, oh, that's going to suck. But no, they totally didn't play that, which was awesome, because none of them, Beckett and, you know, Javi and Ryan and even the boss, who doesn't like Castle generally, they're all just like, no, pretty much we believe that you didn't do it.
Yeah. And they were just like, well, now we have to figure out how and why looks like you did it. Right.
Right. And that was great because that's what they should have focused on because that was the whole point of it. So that alone, I was just like, that's fabulous. I loved how they did that. And I loved how when Ryan very kind of quietly on the side told Espensito about their relationship. So when that topic was brought up with her, with Beckett, it wasn't like this big hoo-ha thing comedy. They just played it really smooth, very simple, like, it was a non-issue.
Right. They're like, we know, we're cool, let's just move on.
Yeah, I liked that too. So there were a lot of points, I think, in this episode where I think they took the tone that I wanted them to take with it, which was good.
Yeah.
I'm totally with you, Susie. The one thing that kind of depressed, or Beckett's conversation with Lainey was the only one that stuck out a little bit for me.
No. What were they talking about?
She was crying and she thought that
Castle might have cheated. Because I think she should have, you know, she knew he didn't do the murder, but...
But she thought maybe he cheated?
She thought maybe he cheated. I'm like, come on, you know better than that.
And then after she thought about it, she was like, yeah, I know he didn't do it.
But I was just surprised Lady was like, I know what you mean, girl.
She was just being supportive friend. She was like, okay. I have no dog in this race. I'm just going to be your supportive friend.
We'll just say it was Beckett's hormones or something, whatever. it was a tough time for her. You had to let it out over a glass of wine and a girlfriend talk.
All right, so...
I thought his escape was brilliant, though.
Oh, yeah, that was really awesome. Good. Because at first, I thought that the bad guy had gotten him.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Because, you know, you could see it coming a mile away, and I'm just going, oh, come on, really, really, really? And then the switch that it turned out to be Castle doing it, I thought that was great because it made it a little less obvious, which was nice.
And the way it ended, too, was really cool where, you know, she's just like, Castle, you shot him and he fell in the water and don't worry about the fact that you can't find his body, but I'm sure he's dead. It's good. Let's move on. And he's just got this look on his face.
No.
And he's like, oh, no.
Until 6 months later when they resurrect him trying to kill people.
For the season finale.
Yes, exactly. There you go. I did like the use of the killer, though, because we haven't seen him in a while, and they had played him up as being such a terrible threat, and then, you know, they went a long time without bringing him back again, and I thought this was a great episode and a great way to do that.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I was like, oh, yeah, that guy. I remember him. Yeah, that was pretty good. All right, so wrapping up, thumbs up for Castle. Yay! Yes. Next up, we're going to talk Revolution. Peter, I think you're my Revolution and compatriot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy the show's doing so well, and I know that everyone else on this probably only watched the pilot, and I did not love the pilot. I was like, meh. But this episode in particular looked like it was going to be an episode I wasn't going to like, but it was pretty good. Like, it was just one of those things where basically the promo was very misleading. But basically, we basically meet kind of the Lando Calrissian almost character where Miles has this old friend, and I mean, he's pretty much 2 seconds away from, you scoundrel, you've got a lot of guts coming here. I mean, he basically says that.
Yeah.
But he actually is, like, evil. Because was he a heroin drug dealer? Is that what he is?
Yeah, he had poppy plants, and that's how he has, like, basically a bunch of hookers, and the way he keeps them is he grows heroin and feeds it to them, and he keeps them working. And he does it all, you know, in the modern age of revolution or the postmodern age of revolution where the pimp has to actually grow his own heroin to keep his girls hooked. I think that's innovative.
Right. And the hook of the show, and this is what I think the show's been, in a way it is kind of like, you know, I've seen the Lost comparisons, is that the last episode was very much about Giancarlo Esposito's character, and this one was about the bearded guy, the computer geek. I'm sorry, I don't remember what his name is, but, I mean, like, they do a good job of, like you see this one character before everyone lost power, and who was that person before everything happened? And so this guy was, like, he had this, even after, it's like he had this woman that he was in love with, and everything was great, and he's got, like, $100 million, but he never really felt brave. He never really felt like, you know, he could do that, and he left her. And so now we're wondering what happened to her, you know, like, are they going to meet up again? And this episode was great because it gives him his moment to be brave. He's the one who takes down the guy. He kills the drug dealer guy.
Yeah,
you know?
and that's so, the thing is, the thing is, his wife had always been telling him that he was braver than he believed, but he didn't believe her. He thought that this world, because he was at the top of the world because he became this billionaire. Right. And then when they lose power, they lose everything, he gets to the bottom of the echelon and he's getting beat up again by all the school bullies. And so he totally loses his confidence and thinks that he cannot take care of his wife at all. It's just, it's heartbreaking. It's really, and I really want him to run into her again once he has actually...
Oh, me too.
Yeah, once he's actually now believes that he can be the man that she needs. He really doesn't think that he can be that for her. So...
Also, they did a good job of, like, in the last episode, I like how we're also seeing how the main girl is becoming, she's getting some of her humanity back. Because remember, the last few episodes, it's kind of like she's becoming a lot colder, you know?
Yeah, she was doing what Miles told her to do, was toughen up. And because she'd been getting really hard lessons, every time she tried to be compassionate to people, she would get screwed or almost killed or get other people killed. She literally got other people killed because she was trying to be nice. And Miles told her, you can't be nice in this world. You have to be cold. And then she went a little overboard. She went a little too far cold. And Miles was like, yeah, come on back a little bit. So, yeah, this is a good... But she was totally prepared to kill that guy, though. You know, they sent her on the assassin mission, and she sees this guy who used to be a sheriff. He's got a family. He's got a little baby. He's got a wife. He's got, you know... And she doesn't want to do it, but she's prepared to do it.
Yep,
and she does, she's like, she does what's necessary to save her family. I was like, wow, all right. So I think that they are really, and that was what I was hoping for in this show, is they start her off in one spot, and we're going to progress with that character. She had the most to grow, the most,
right.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty good.
I would agree, because I didn't love her in the pilot, but I like her now. I mean, I still like Miles the most, but yeah, I would agree. I think her character is, like, seeing some change and stuff, so...
All right, so thumbs up for Revolution. Next up is Vegas.
Yes.
Really?
Vegas.
Really? What do you mean, really? What does that mean?
I was wondering if anybody was watching it.
It's the highest rated new show this fall.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
I'm loving it. I love Vegas.
I don't... Okay. I like it. I don't love it.
How about this? I love spending time with the characters. When the episode ends, I want to stay in that world. I'll give you
that's always a good sign, then. I mean, that's a great sign.
Like, I mean, if that's true, yeah. I mean, but again, I haven't seen the show. But I like Dennis Quaid, so. I mean.
There's been something wrong with his voice the past couple weeks.
He's I think he's getting old. I think that's basically, he's got old man voice, which is so weird because.
I think he's got a cold. It wasn't like that in the pilot.
I think, it was.
He's not Sean Connery. He's not 80. I mean, like.
No, but he is really kind of old now. Like,
he's not that old.
It feels like his voice is, he's got old man voice, which is weird because it's all gravelly and deep. But then Michael Chiklis naturally has kind of a deep voice. So then when they're talking to each other, I'm like, are you guys eating rocks?
But I played the Thing in two Fantastic Four movies.
So just listening to them talk when they're in the same room together is really bizarre. That's all I have to say about that. But I think the mobster stories are
much more engaging than the Case of the Week, the procedural story. I mean, this, I had to go online to jog my memory what the procedural was.
I still don't
know
what happened.
They're investigating the kidnapping of the son of the gaming commissioner, and it turns out his uncle took him.
Oh, right. Which was obvious from the beginning.
Yeah,
so,
it was kind of obvious.
But the thing, let's talk about the important stuff, which was
Savino's wife comes to visit.
Yes, that's fantastic. Because he's trying to go legitimate, and he needs his wife there to make him be more legitimate.
And she keeps finding clues about his underhand dealing.
She knows what he is, but he keeps claiming that he's become a different man. Mm-hmm. But she's seeing clues that he's just the same as she thought. And apparently they have an agreement that she gets to live separate from him while he's being a criminal. And he's all like, oh, I'm not a criminal anymore. I'm totally legit now. And she's like, yeah, no. But what's interesting is I think that the woman that's in charge of the money room.
Oh, you mean basically, the person they brought in after the pilot.
The woman that's in charge of the money room.
She's having a big flirtation with the brother.
She
with Jason
is,
Amara.
But I think she kind of has a thing for Savoy, too. Like, that's kind of what I feel like.
Savini?
His name is Savoy, because it's the Savoy. You're right? No. Oh, it's his name. Am I missing? Anyway. I think Michael Chiklis. How about
Michael
that?
Michael Chiklis.
I feel like she kind of has a hero worship kind of infatuation with him, and she knows he's married, so she's not really pursuing it, but she's like super loyal to him and super like
I'm waiting for the day where she and Chiklis team up to take down her idiot father.
Well, yeah, but I think her motivation behind teaming up with him is, I'm not quite sure what it is. I mean, granted, I see that the sheriff's brother wants to date her. I see that's where that's going. They're doing that romance. And I think she's kind of half-heartedly doing it because she's kind of expected to. But I think that she has her eyes are on Chiklis. Yeah. So that's... And now that the wife has moved there, that's going to be interesting. So I like that story.
And the stuff with the family dysfunction.
Oh, the brothers.
Because Ralph was kind of like on his younger brother and getting in his face. And then the son's getting in his face. It's like...
Well, the thing is... All of them are working in a very dangerous profession, and they're all trying to be protective of each other, and that just doesn't work.
You can't do that.
Right.
They need to watch Blue Bloods.
But on Blue Bloods, they do it well because they keep a separation.
Yes.
They separate themselves from each other so that they are not interfering with each other's work. And on here, the older brother's in charge of everybody, and so he's like, I gotta protect my son, I gotta protect my brother, I can't let... I'm like, you guys cannot be an effective police force that way.
Nope.
So, yeah, that's problematic. But I still like the show.
Oh, I like the show.
This week's episode I thought was pretty good.
It was okay.
Yeah, all right. I give it a thumbs up. Tom gives it the sideways.
Thumbs, 45-degree angle up.
You can't be making up angles now. All right. Next up is Supernatural. And this week's episode was, I'd say 2/3 of it was awesome.
Yeah.
What is up with these lame old flashback stuff?
Well, okay. Yeah,
I really don't care about Sam and the.
Oh,
I did say 2/3.
I know, but man, it's just out of the blue.
Seeing Cass and Purgatory, I'm interested in. But Sam and the dog in his happy year. Really?
Well, apparently, this wasn't even about the dog. This was Sam fixing appliances. I was like, are you kidding me?
Maybe Sam in that time is our version of Purgatory.
Well, now I didn't sign up for that as a viewer.
Yeah.
At least Dean's storyline. And I actually kind of liked Dean hooking up with Benny, because at least Benny's an interesting character.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
This season of Supernatural, just, boy,
it's, weird.
It's all over.
Well, it's
the
not
place.
Actually, I like this episode. I thought this episode was actually pretty good because we got the purgatory flashbacks, mm-hmm. and we saw how Dean began to trust Benny.
Yes.
And again, it was only two-thirds good, because the one-third, which was the Sam and his happy dog days with the woman that he met, who was apparently a loner just like him or whatever, I don't know.
They have no chemistry. Oh, my God.
I know. Yeah.
But if we... Just tune that out. Just, like, let it go. The episode itself was really good, because I like the fact when Benny called... Dean dropped everything. And yep. ran to his side and helped him out and was like, what do you need? What's going on? And Benny, I think, has never really had a friend since he's been a vampire. Like, everybody... Mm-hmm. So he was really...
Those vampires he was hanging with were not his friends.
Right. So it was really cool to see his surprise at, okay, this is how friends behave. Like, all right. And he was like, oh, that's why you wouldn't leave Castiel. And he's like, he gets it.
Yeah.
And that whole, you know, they call each other brother thing, yeah. I think that was from Dean, because Dean calls people his mm-hmm. brother who he would die for.
Whom he
well,
trusts.
It's the loyalty that Dean has to people that, you know, sometimes his falling, but, you know, he just very easily was able to shift it to Benny, because Benny needed him, just like Sam, his younger brother, needed him for so long. And I think that's just kind of in Dean's character.
Right.
Like, not just the character, but, like, the character of the character. to do that and want to protect and help, which is why he still wants to go out there and, you know, and do the hunting and keep doing and protecting people. And Sam has just been like, but Dean, I don't want to. I want to find my life. You know? So I like it, because it just shows that Dean is like, no, this is really what we need to do and we should still do it. And there's Sam, who I just really want him to get a haircut first, and then, you know, we'll deal with everything else after that.
But then let's talk about the very end, which is Sam figures out that Dean has spent all this time helping a vampire. Mm-hmm. And the look, the judgy look on his face, the anger, I was like, you have got to be kidding
me. Like,
anybody remember the name Ruby? Anybody?
Seriously.
Anybody?
That's what I was thinking.
So I was just like, you have got to be kidding me. You do not get to judge anyone, Mr. I let Lucifer from his cage.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and apparently next week is all about that fight, and I'm not sure. Like, I feel like they can't have this argument, because Sam does not have an ethical foot to stand on at all. But anyway, that's for next week, and we'll discuss that, how badly that goes next week.
But
so,
it sounds like this season we're pretty much all in it for Dean. So.
Oh, yes. So thumbs up. I think thumbs up for the episode. I know, maybe not for you, but...
Two-thirds of a thumb up.
All right, next up, let's talk about Arrow. And this week, I want to start with the very end, which we finally get to John Barrowman.
Well, the good part.
Yeah, we finally get to John Barrowman for a grand total of 5 seconds.
The introduction of the well-dressed man.
I got so excited when I saw his name in the credits, and then I waited, and I started, like, looking at my watch and getting kind of pissed.
It does feel like if you're going to put John Barrowman in an episode and put his name, because he got the, like, John Barrowman, yeah. And then you have him in for 5 seconds. You're like, the only reason I'm okay with it is because I know he's recurring.
Yeah.
And it's going to build up. And I'm aware of that. So I'm cool.
They still didn't have him listed on IMDb as of Thursday.
Oh, well.
Because they're being so cagey who he's playing.
Right.
He's
so.
In there now, though.
Say what?
He's in there now.
Who do they have him listed as?
The well-dressed man.
Seriously? Everybody's crazy about a well-dressed man.
He's a well-dressed man. Seriously. And I think it was just from last night on IMDb is where I got it. So
oh, that's
he's there
funny.
Now.
The episode.
But even up to that point, I think, because I've been watching Arrow, and I've been like, you know, kind of half committed, you know, doing other stuff on the internet while I watch it. But this was the first episode that I actually went, oh, you know, I'm just like really focused on watching it. And I kind of liked it. I think we've gotten to the point now where I'm like, the characters are fairly well established. I like that he's finally called in Diggle, so he's got his...
Yes.
That's actually... I was so happy
when
they actually had the conversation. They talked about, you know, what's right, what's wrong. He's like, I'm a soldier. He's like, you're not a soldier. Like, they actually had...
I love discussion. That they started with the fight before they had the conversation.
Yes, that's true, too. So, and then the thing that sucks is they finally resolve their issues. And they're like, all right, we're going to be partners. And he's immediately arrested. So I'm like, okay.
And they finally showed that he uses a he's now using a voice modulator.
That was the thing. Like, where did that? He's got all his fancy tools, and the only reason he uses the voice modulator this time is because he's talking to her, and he's worried, you know, that she'll figure out who he is because nobody else could figure it out by his face or the bottom half of his face and his voice. Only she is smart enough to.
Hey, if we can watch Clark Kent put on glasses and nobody know who he is, I think we're okay with this. So just go with it. Just go with it. There has to be a little bit of, you know, suspension of disbelief, and you just let that
willing
go. Willing, yes, you just got to let that go.
No, but I'm still not willing. I will stay. I'm still not willing to believe that that stupid hood can stay on until he can show us that he tapes it to his head. It bugs me so much.
See,
if they could just do that, I'd be fine. I'd be willing to believe anything.
I like the way they've structured the flashbacks on this show.
With the island.
They're not too intrusive, and each one is just, they keep enticing you. You want to know more, you want to know more, you want to know more.
And they're really relevant to what's going on, like, at that time in the real-time thing.
Bingo, which is how you're supposed to use a flashback.
Right, and I like the whole, you know, he's teaching him how to kill the bird to survive, and then the girl was like, I saw his eyes, he's a killer. You know, so that was all. So you see the beginning of that interwoven to where what he is now, and I think, yeah, that was pretty interesting.
I was surprised she saw his eyes and didn't recognize.
She saw his eyes, and exactly. It was like, aren't you?
Apparently, has a voice modulator, a hood, and some spray paint over his eyes, but no contact lenses. You know.
Suspension.
Yeah.
So I thought the episode was pretty good. I thought, especially the way it ended, because now I'm like, oh, I really want to see the next episode. I want to see, because they have footage of him. Well, they don't see what he grabs out of that trash can.
Right.
But they have enough evidence to be like, but they don't really have evidence though.
I think it's only going to be a matter of, I mean, because you know who Laurel is going to become, it's only a matter of time before she joins Team Arrow.
Right, that's true, but I think, because I actually, there was a moment where when the cop figures out that it's him, that I was like, he's the worst superhero ever. He can't keep his secret identity for 5 seconds.
Or 4 episodes.
Right, but I think they're getting this out of the way. So
yeah, they have to.
So that the cops...
It's like, no, it's such a dumb thing, though, because, like, note to self, when changing out of my superhero costume and into a disguise, don't do it in front of a camera.
Security cameras.
Well, he didn't actually, to his defense, didn't actually change. All right, we need to move on. Let's keep rolling. So thumbs up for Arrow for me.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we're gonna talk about Modern Family for quick.
Fun episode.
Yes.
Oh yeah, this was the grandpa, the ventriloquist thing, right?
Yes. And then with great stick is the set, because she's like, it's Grumpy Man or whatever. She's doing the impersonation. And the doll is wearing the same clothes as Jay's wearing. And, like, as she's doing it, he steps in front of her and he says something. And he just, rawr, and he growls, and he walks off. I was like, wait a minute, that doll looks like Jay. And I went, huh. And it's like, as soon as my brain was just kind of processing that, they actually say it. It's like, she married her dummy. That's fantastic.
I like how they're keeping Haley involved, even though she's at school.
She's like, you can't get rid of my stuff. No, but the great thing was the motorcycle.
Is it 47 hours, 27 hours? What was the movie?
The guy had to cut off his arm with like a really dull blade.
140.
They did the same thing, and he pulls out the little thing. He's like, I'm gonna cut off my leg, and all he did was cut off the jean. He was cursing, and he ordered lunch or something. Like, he was crazy. I was like, how is this guy ordering lunch? It was so funny. Like, all of that was pretty good. I thought that was great. So, thumbs up. It's a good episode.
Yeah, it was fun.
All right, next up, let's talk about Big Bang Theory.
It was a Stephen Hawking's Word with Friends.
That was awesome, because except that I'm like, I think they're misrepresenting Stephen Hawking. I'm like, are they talking to him and make sure it's okay?
Well, they have to clear that.
Oh, okay. Because I was and he's just like, they're representing him as this guy who just like hates to lose and all this other stuff. It's like, man. It was pretty funny, though.
It was very funny. And the interplay with that, and then Penny's, and the B storyline, too, with Penny and her college class, and Leonard trying everything he can to help her. And then you find out at the end that the girls... other two that were helping her. And they're like, we got you a B+ on purpose, because otherwise it would look a little weird.
B-.
B-, right.
A B-. That was funny. I actually laughed like a bunch of times, like out loud. I have to say, last season there weren't that many episodes where I actually kind of laughed out loud a little bit. I would smile and I'd be like amused, but this so far this season, like every episode, there's been at least like one or two jokes that just made me kind of go ah, you know, like actually laugh out loud. And this one did, and I think it was a lot of the Stephen Hawking stuff with Sheldon.
Actually, I thought the Penny stuff with the school was actually a more interesting storyline for me.
I thought one of my favorite lines is when the girls are talking. And Amy says, they just have to be about the weirdest couple I know. And Penny says, really? He said, well, she's in the room.
That was pretty good. That was. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, Big Bang is great. And I really love the... I know we talked about this a while ago, about the addition of the characters. But like all the chemistry between all the characters really works. The girls versus the guys. I think they balanced it really well.
Yep.
Thumbs up. All right.
Yes.
Let's talk about Vampire Diaries.
Ooh.
No comments? Because it's all, the whole thing is, it's the Rebecca thing is tragic, yet...
You kind of feel sorry for her, but then you don't.
Well, because she killed Elena, and she almost killed Matt, but then she wants Matt to not be mad at her. I was like, you should have thought of that before you threw him in a lake.
Yeah, seriously.
The shiny new truck doesn't help. It's nice, but it doesn't help.
Right, it's like you murdered my girlfriend, or my ex-girlfriend, and you tried to murder me, yet you want me to date you. Yeah. That's a problem.
I just like when Klaus throws it back in her face about how her taste in men...
is awful.
Oh, it's like, could you just imagine centuries of sibling rivalry?
Dealing with that. But the thing is, I actually think Matt is a good choice. I just think she messed up.
Oh, no, she messed up.
Yeah, because, I mean, if she had actually managed to get Matt, that would have been probably the best choice she's ever made with a guy.
Yep.
But she totally screwed that up. But then, I don't know, I really felt bad when he daggered her. I really felt, I was like, really?
Oh, she had it coming.
No,
well,
but...
she did, but the way they did it was pretty low, you know, because here she was kind of believing that, you know, that Stefan was... helping her because he wanted to help Elena. And then she realizes after she's, you know, kind of opened her heart a little bit to him and been honest. And then she realizes that she just fell right into the trap. And then, you know, Klaus was right there and got what he wanted. And so I did feel actually a little
bad. I felt bad for her.
It just reminds me, you always hurt the one you love.
Yeah, but then I'm also sick of him daggering his siblings.
I know.
I really am. It's because, like, nobody dies. It's like you put them on pause.
Yeah.
So now she's going to go into a casket for we don't know how long until they
meet her again next week.
Yeah.
Spring sweeps.
Whatever. But I just kind of feel like, really? It's just because it's not like... The thing is, I think Rebecca, even though she's like thousands of years old, I feel like she needs to grow. Like, she's the one character that has the potential to grow into a better person. And she needs that time. She doesn't need to keep being paused with a dagger in her heart.
Yeah. She's, then she just comes back. She comes back being bitter again. Yeah.
Right. So I think he's actually not helping his sister at all. But, I mean, of course, Klaus doesn't care about that.
Nope.
Exactly.
He just cares about...
But the Hunter storyline, let's go to that real quick.
Yeah.
Which is really cool that the Hunter's tattoo develops as they kill more vampires.
That was kind of cool.
That's pretty cool.
And when the hybrid goes to check on him, it's like, dude.
You're so dead.
I mean, yeah. Don't taunt
the vampire
your enemy.
Hunter. Yeah.
Whom you know has, you know, ganked a bunch of your people.
Yeah.
Or non-people.
Yeah, your un-people.
Your un-people, right.
The whole Elena storyline and, you know, her at the college with Damon, and they go to the frat party thing with... And it's like her whole, like, oh, she's getting into the dancing and loving it. And then suddenly she goes, oh, yeah. I was like, really? You just can't go with Damon. Just hang with him.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, I'm like, what is with this whole, oh, no, it should be Stephanie. Should be the one walking me through this.
Like no.
It's like going shoes shopping with Imelda Marcos.
Yeah, right.
Well, my problem was she's already knows that Stefan can't teach her. We've already established all the reasons why Stefan can't do it. So why should she feel guilty that Damon's doing it? Other than it does draw her into
Damon's web.
It's intimacy to it.
It's a temptation for her.
Yeah. And I get that, but I also feel like she shouldn't feel guilty. She's a vampire now.
exactly. And Damon's teaching her how to do it like
without killing anybody.
Yeah,
right.
the most responsibly you can as a vampire, really.
Right, and then her friend just looks at her, and I think her friend was looking at her not necessarily because she was feeding, but because how close she was to Damon. That was, oh my god, you're cheating on your boyfriend look, more than anything else. I'm also kind of nervous and possibly upset about the whole Stefan turning her into a human thing. First of all, let me just say this. If they turn Elena back into a human, I'm going to be very upset. Let's just put that out there right now.
There's no resetting. She's a vampire, damn it.
I know. That is the huge reset button.
Unless it's at the end of the series.
Okay, yeah, fine. Maybe for the finale.
I don't know. I still don't like that.
For the end of the series?
No, I still don't like that.
You want them to live for happily forever after?
Whatever. But I'm like, we're done with human Elena.
I think we're okay, though. I think we're safe. My guess is because as soon as they mentioned it, they like uncovered that story at the dinner table or whatever. I was like, okay, now I get where this season's going to go. This is going to be the plot point, is Klaus is there because now he wants to get the map so he can get the cure, so that he can get Elena back, so he can get the blood.
My thing is, I don't think Stefan is thinking this all the way through because turning Elena back into a human just makes her a blood bank for Klaus. That's not a life.
Well, it's not. But don't forget, Stefan even said, he's like, you know, he told Rebecca, I think, when he was talking to her, he's like, yeah, but this is Elena. If she turns off that switch, that humanity switch, she won't be able to turn it back on again.
Catherine.
He's really just thinking of that.
I understand, but he's not thinking about what kind of life he's condemning her to by turning her back into a human. Anyway.
Not at all. Damon would.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yep. Thank you. The brother that I like.
All right.
The brother who's not a sap.
Thumbs up for this week's Vampire Diaries. It was a good contrast. There was a lot of plots happening, but it was all of them were good. There was no bad storylines happening. So thumbs up for Vampire Diaries.
Okay.
Next up is Person of Interest.
Oh, the date.
I love the fact that they totally scammed her and she had no idea.
Yes.
Know, right?
By the end of the episode. Because I would have thought that she would have figured it out. That he was the guy in the suit, and she totally...
Well, he put on the glasses. Very Clark Kent. he puts the glasses on. I was like,
that's the ultimate disguise, you know.
I just love him and Finch arguing over the earpiece.
Oh, God. Right about that.
Stay on script.
That wasn't the right answer.
The fact that Finch went in and made his profile and set up a date for this... That was the funniest odd couple sort of moment ever.
And he was so excited about it. That one scene where he's explaining it to Reese while Reese is following her, and he's like, oh yeah, you know, I set you up with this date for her tonight at 8 o'clock, this whole thing. Oh, and then Reese is like, well, how is that going to work? You know, how are we going to get connected? He's like, oh, don't worry, you've been flirting with her all day. And he's like, what did I just text her?
That was awesome. That whole thing, and then he's like, I guess he's trying to date her like he would, and it's not like Finch would, and they're conflicting, and it's just like, that is so. She's like, I thought you hated such and such, and he's like, yeah, all right. And he's like, you didn't read the packet.
Exactly. Oh, that was so good. And then Zoe, bless her heart, I love Zoe. So
yes,
I'm glad
she's back next week.
A little tap on the butt. Oh, the look on his face.
That was funny.
Yes. Well, I'm excited. That makes me excited for next week, which is they're going to pretend to be a couple in the suburbs. That's going to be awesome.
Oh, it's going to be brilliant. Yeah. So yeah, there was just, and the overall story in this episode was good too. With what's her name from White Collar. You know, she's one playing Maxine, and I did, even though we saw her kind of get set up as, you know, that storyline with the cover story with the FBI the head of HR, and it wasn't really him or whatever.
She felt,
I mean, I'm glad because she was very contrite about it, and I actually did, you know, I felt kind of bad for her because she's like, this guy died because of me and this stupid story, you know, so.
Well, the thing is I could kind of see her mistakes, like, as she was confirming her sources, I was like, that doesn't seem like a confirmed source. Like, as she was,
that wasn't
doing
a real confirmation.
Yeah, because when she tells her boss, I've confirmed it, I was like, I don't think you have. Yeah. Like, there was no one who actually confirmed it for her.
It was just the tip that she got or whatever. So,
and it was, yeah, and they talked about the fact that because of the world of the internet and blogging and stuff, people rush stories exactly. without
confirming sources.
I wonder
if this was a slight indictment of how journalism is
I think
done
so.
These days.
I think so.
I agree. I agree. It's whoever can get to it first. And then she realized that that's not good enough, so that when that whole thing fell apart, she's like, okay, now I'm going to be able to find out who the real head of HR is. But she's like, I'm not doing anything until I get that ledger and I get that proof.
Right.
Which I thought was good. And then we get the whole Fusco the Bee story with him still in with HR.
See,
Fusco being a triple agent.
Yeah, the thing is I'm not sure how I feel about that because I like him being a bad guy. I mean, a good guy. I like him being a good guy. He likes being a good guy.
Yep.
And
he's a bad guy pretending to be a good guy, but still kind of a bad guy.
No,
but
I think he's a good guy now pretending to be a bad guy.
I do too. I think, you know, he's just trying to clean up the stuff that would point to him.
Yeah.
Right.
He doesn't like playing along with those guys.
Yeah, anymore, but I think that his error is that he should tell them what's going on.
Seriously.
I think that's the mistake they
always
make.
Oh, you know they'll find out anyway.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is, he knows how they work. They bug his phone all the time.
Yes.
And so, and he's told him, I can bug your phone whether you have your phone on or off. I can always tell. Like, that's insanity that he would not tell them what's going on. So that's just waiting for, and I think it's dumb. And Fosco's not the brightest star in the sky, but I don't think he's that dumb.
He's not that stupid, but I think it's also because he understands too that maybe they're so he's not the first one on their speed dial because that's Carter. So he's kind of the backup guy, the secondary guy for the legwork. So while he's having those conversations, and even though he might know that they might be able to bug him anytime or listen in, he probably figures what's true is that they're probably busy doing other stuff at the time, so he can take that bit of leverage. But the other thing is, and they've made it kind of clear too, is he's really focused on, you know, it's his son, and he's worried about, you know, the threats they're making against him and his son.
Which is why he should bring them in. That's all.
And he will. I think he probably will. They're probably setting us up for that. But can I just say before we end this, it's the funniest thing because every time they mention, oh, this vigilante who's out there, you know, the man in the suit, I'm like, dude, wear a pair of jeans and a t-shirt.
Put on a hoodie,
it's done.
Something.
It's done.
Yeah, that's
done.
What I actually
done.
Thought that he could when he
I
needed
mean, he
to rescue
just by putting on a pair of glasses.
I know, right?
Yeah, because when he was working with a reporter, I was like, because when he followed Carter, he put on a leather jacket,
mm-hmm.
and so Carter didn't know that was him. So I was just like, all you got to do that's your disguise. Don't wear your suit, man. It's just like that's it.
Or capes and a tight.
Or capes and a tight.
Cape and tights. I think my favorite scene was when they have the date and Finch has to hide in the closet and Bear goes straight for it. And then I have a quibble. I kind of wish we had seen Clark Peters before this episode or that they had delayed the reveal who was running HR.
Oh, right.
It was so obvious.
It was obvious it was him mainly because that's the guy from The Wire.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay.
And he's in Tremé. And what was it that he was in last that was also... He was also
yeah, he's,
in,
a,
oh,
he's
huh?
a big... He's too big of an
actor
to play
just,
the character.
You're not going to have him come in and say three lines and leave.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I agree. Like, I was like, okay. But that was the big reveal. Anyway. But let's move on. Thumbs up. Person of interest. Next up, talk about Tron really quickly. I know we haven't talked about it in a while, but one, it hasn't been on for a while. But they had their season one finale, Scar Part 1 and 2... And the thing that set this up is different. Well, one, we didn't deal with any of the kitty storylines, which is all the people in the garage that we as adults don't care about that storyline at all.
It immediately became a better story.
Yes, immediately was 10 times better. And it didn't deal with Beck hardly at all. It was mainly about Tron and his story. We got all these flashbacks to how he got his scar, because that's what's called scars. You find out how he got scarred, who did it, the history of how Clue took over, like all you get all that information, and you get a guest appearance by the actor who plays Clue.
Exactly, still uncredited.
Jeff Bridges,
awesome.
Exactly, and you know any episode that they've had that has had his character in it is immediately a better episode.
Right,
because it's just, I mean, yes, that character is absolutely critical to the storyline, and he plays it incredibly well.
Yes, and just Tron this week, he was just on a revenge kick, and he wasn't going to let anybody stop him, and And as much as you think Beck has been getting better and he's been training and you think, oh, maybe he's as good as Tron, when you find out when they actually go hand to hand, he is not as good as Tron. Tron kicked his butt. It was awesome. But I didn't understand what Beck's issue was on why he couldn't kill the lieutenant of Clue. I was like, why can't...
I didn't see a downside to that.
Yeah, I was like, why can't we kill him? He's like, you can't kill him because you'll ruin the reputation of the running. I was like, no, you kill guys all the time, man. What are you talking about? Like, he's de-rezzed other programs that he's fought before. I didn't understand why this was like, you can't... Well, maybe because his motivation was revenge. But if you're doing a revolution, killing the lieutenant of Clue, that's a plus. So that's the only problem I had with the episode. I thought that was a little weird. But I think that Bruce Boxleitner brought it. Like, the voice acting of the character, like, you felt his intensity, his emotion, what he was going through, and all of that. It was a really good episode. I thought
all the actors did a great job vocally with this episode. They really did. I loved having John Glover come in as his former friend,
right?
Now turncoat, and I think they did just a beautiful job vocally.
Yeah,
right through it.
Yeah, it was really well done. So I'd say this two parter was probably the best episodes they've done all season. So thumbs up.
Agreed.
All right. Next up, let's talk about Grimm. And Susie, I know this is your show, so you want to go first?
I liked this episode. I liked it and I didn't like it. It was kind of obvious that the intern did it.
Oh, I'm just glad the intern paid off.
Me too, and I'm glad he's done and gone. Yeah.
Well, that guy is from Bones, yes, and so I recognized him.
Oh,
and
he was?
Yeah, and so I was like, and he plays an intern on Bones,
exactly,
which is sort of funny.
Yeah,
and so I was like,
that they brought him in, they did his thing, and I'm like, okay, that's why they've been shoving him in our face for the last couple episodes. So at least, like you said, at least it paid off.
But except that the thing was because they were doing that, I knew immediately that he was the guy.
Yeah,
like,
same here. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, come on, you guys suck.
I know. So I was not happy with that. But the rest of it I thought was pretty good. And the whole idea that there was this other killer out there getting confessions from the Vesson and basically threatening, you know, or at least intimidating Nick and saying, hey, I'm doing what you didn't do. So they thought maybe there was another Grimm. And for a while there, I thought that this other guy, that the intern could have been a Grimm. I didn't think he was going to turn out to be a Vesson, some weird little like face mouth thing, whatever the hell that was. Like, that's not the normal Vesson we usually see, which are like animal-like.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
It looked like an earthworm.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, or a big Grimm out of teeth, or like one of those things from Dune. But I liked the fact that Hank, again, was like totally on board with it, with Nick, and, you know, he was just like, is he one? Is he, you know, is that one? You know, just doing his usual bit, you know, as the guy who's in on it with them now. And I particularly like the fact that they're showing that Nick is starting to get a little annoyed with this whole, you know, Juliet doesn't remember who he is thing, and he's sleeping on the couch, and he's just like, okay, you know, it's starting to wear on him. So I was glad to see that, and he was getting kind of
I'm starting to wonder, whose house is it? It's like...
It's her house.
It's her house?
Yeah, she owns the house. So
you get your own place.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it... Especially, it looks like, well, we lead up to the Renard-Juliet date.
Yeah.
Prince not so charming.
Well, he's quite charming, I beg to differ.
Yeah.
But they're semi dates where they're like, oh, let's just meet and talk about Nick. I was like, is that what we're doing? But yeah, that chemistry is actually really pretty good. I like it.
But it's weird, think about it, because he's cute, because he was like trying to get her on the phone. He's like all flustered. And we're like, hey, usually the captain is like totally the man who knows what he's doing and very
right.
confident. And then he was just kind of like a high school kid, like nervous talking to the girl on the phone. He's like, so you want to meet, maybe to talk about it, you know? So that was cute, because he was like actually reacting naturally. But I'm not really sure what we're supposed to be doing with her reactions. Like, does she like it or does she not?
She does. And I think that's part of the problem. She feels guilty. She does like him, and she's feeling something for him, but she feels guilty about it. So then when they had their big kiss... And she flashed back to the original kiss. She's like, what does this mean? It's like, you kissed me before. Like, she's remembering it, but she doesn't know what it means.
I just
hope when Adeline gets back.
Which is next week.
We find out exactly what the whole thing was about. Because for me, this is like treadmill You know,
it doesn't, I don't think so. I like it. I like the story.
The pacing is what I don't like.
Oh, okay.
It's been strung out so long.
But it has been moving forward though,
inch by inch.
But if it moved any faster, it wouldn't seem real. Like I would like him struggling with his obsession with Juliet.
Yeah.
Makes sense because he doesn't want to admit, one, that he kissed her, two, that he's a Vesson or any of that. So he doesn't want to admit any of it. So him showing him struggling against it works for me. And then showing her struggle against it, and then now they're kind of being pulled together because in the preview for next week, she tells Nick that she's attracted to another guy. Yeah. So, that's...
He's better looking and a better actor. Snap!
He's just taller, I'll give him that.
He is a better actor, I'm sorry. The guy's... he's okay as Nick, but the guy playing Renard's a far superior actor. Sorry about that for you. Burst your bubble.
I'll let you say that, but I can't say I share the belief.
All right, so thumbs up with this episode. Well, yeah. Thumbs up for the storyline part.
Thumbs up for the arc story.
Yes, not so much for the case.
The Vesson of the week, thumbs down.
Yeah.
All right, next up, let's talk about French, and it's called an origin story.
Wow.
I have to say, they surprised me this week. I thought this week was going to be all angst, which there was a great deal of angst. There was a great deal of angst. But I was surprised by Peter. Like, I thought that he was just going to go medieval and start torturing the crap out of this guy, but that's not what he did.
Oh, no.
And then what he did do, surprised, I was like, what the heck does this mean?
Does this make Peter an observer?
Or? Is his hair all going to fall out? Like, remember when they had that episode when they showed him as a fake observer? Like, because they were like, oh, what's going to happen?
I think it was a joke, though.
Right.
It was supposed to be a joke because...
Or was it?
Right.
But that's the first thing I thought of when they went this way. It's like, oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm interested because he's talking about all his emotions. And I'm like, what if that thing turns off his emotions?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So he has no idea what that thing's going to do to him.
Peter?
Then I was like, what if they can freaking track you with that thing? Are you an idiot? Like...
That was the first thing that I thought of, is you really want to do that? I mean, then they'd be linked to you.
And we also,
well, we don't know how they work exactly.
We don't know how they work. Well, that's the point. He doesn't either. And also, we saw that when he pulled it out of the other guy, it killed them. So it's not like he can change his mind.
Mm-hmm. No.
Well, so, the fact that it, like, dug into him like an alien, holy crap.
No, it was more like it snapped into place like magnets.
Or like one of those things on Funnel's
Guys. It went in on its own.
Yeah, it's like...
Yes.
So, I'm intrigued.
All evil alien technology is self-inserting.
Exactly.
Nice wording.
It is in the rule book, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
But
it's law.
I have to say I'm totally intrigued by this. I think it was stupid, but it also shows that the bishops don't play around when they lose a child. They go
crazy.
They lose their freaking minds.
And
like,
at least he's not endangering anybody else, unlike Walter.
Walter, like,
causing
blew up a planet.
Breaking two universes with
Walter.
Well, before you go saying that, though, we don't know what the results are going to
That's
be
true.
For us. So
we have no idea.
He could be a danger to everyone.
Yeah, he could turn into an observer and just, like, blow them all up.
All
like,
them.
You don't know. But, yeah, that...
Or he could be the Kwisatz Haderach.
Nice reference. For all of you who don't know, that was a Dune reference. And if you don't know, why don't you know?
Shame on you.
I just the
videotape.
And
Walter telling Olivia, you need to see, I mean,
you need to grieve.
You need to grieve. You need to see this.
Yeah.
He of all people saying that.
Yeah, well, he's like, what? I understand. He's like, these are the mistakes I made. Don't make those mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You need to grieve. You need to deal with this in a healthy manner, unlike how I did it. And I like... I have to say, what's weird is I was really upset that Edo is gone, but the rhythm of the show is more like I'm used to now. One, because Olivia was very quiet when Edo was there.
Right.
She hardly spoke
because
at all.
Because she didn't know...
What to say.
Right.
She pretty much deferred to Edo.
Right, and now she's back to being the Olivia that I know. So it's
right.
kind of, I'm like, oh, Olivia, I've missed you. But I'm still sad. So it's a weird thing.
My name is Olivia Dunham. You killed my daughter. Prepare to die.
Now, what I thought was so neat about the tape, actually, was that, you know, she called him and was talking to him while watching it right after he'd had that little thing from the Observer inserted, and I had the impression that he was actually watching the tape through her.
That's what I was thinking too.
Really?
Yeah, he had that look on his face that he was actually watching the video as she was talking to him.
Huh?
Describing it, yeah.
I don't know. I didn't pick up on that. That's interesting.
I'll have to rewatch
it. I got that. You may want to take off. But that, it just seemed to be in his eyes like he was looking at what she was describing.
I thought for sure he was like going to phase into the room next to
her. Because she was like, I need you here. Yeah, I see what you're saying. But I don't think it's fully integrated. Like, whatever the tech is, I don't think it's fully integrated in with him. But yeah, if he gets the ability to phase in and out and stuff.
I saw it in the preview for this week.
Oh, that'll be awesome. Superpowers! Yay!
An origin story.
Yeah, it is an origin story. Exactly. This is how he became Super Peter Bishop.
Super.
Holy crap. Is this a loop?
What?
Is this a time loop? What? Like, the Observer's how the Observer's first created, and then it's a loop because... Never mind. I'm thinking.
Oh!
Time loop.
Stop.
Time travel hurts my head.
Yeah. And
forget all this wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff.
Exactly. All right. So we're going to say thumbs up for Fringe, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So that's it for this week. Oh, wait. Tom has news.
I have one piece of news. Ming-Na has been cast as the female lead in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
Nice.
So that should be cool.
We already mentioned Coulson, right?
Yeah. Clark Gregg is repeating his role as Coulson.
Okay, so this is all coming together. When are they going to start shooting the pilot? I need to know. We're in L.A. We should be there. We should be crashing this party. All right, that's all we have for this week. If you have any comments, send us to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We are on Facebook. You can listen to us on getthepointradio.com, Krypton Radio, iTunes, and Weedonopolis. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.